Welcome into Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. We're breaking down the New Orleans Pelicans beating the Knicks 117-116 in the final game of the preseason. No Zion Williamson, but it did not matter too much. It was still a very exciting game. It was super tight late, obviously. It was only a one-point game, so we'll tell you all about that, and we will break down RJ Barrett's easily best performance of what was already a standout preseason.
And then we get into another monster night for Julius Randle, stuffing the box score. And we give you an update on the point guard battle.
And finally, we'll just tie up some loose ends. Mitchell Robinson, Bobby Portis, Kevin Knox, Alonzo Trier, et al. And we will finish off the show that way for you. But let's get into it in just a moment.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Oh, Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives. Oh, he's in.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome everyone to Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf, he's Gavin Shaw. Breaking down New Orleans Pelicans beating the Knicks 117-116 in the preseason finale. The Knicks finish off the preseason 1-3. There was no Zion Williamson tonight, as I mentioned at the tease, but didn't really matter because it was a pretty exciting game. So Gavin, New Orleans, they led through the entire game. I mean, the Knicks never actually took a lead in this one. But the Knicks fought back, and they brought it even once. They also, right at the very end, obviously, had it to a one-point game. It was kind of a chaotic end to the game. The Knicks fouled intentionally inside of a minute, which was really dumb. It was just unnecessary. Like, they could have actually just played defense and, you know, gotten a stop and not needed to foul intentionally at that particular point. And they chose instead to intentionally foul and then still managed to stay in it and stay in it and stay in it. And then finally, you know, they found themselves down by one with 3 seconds left. They got the ball on their own side of the court. Alonzo Trier inbounds it to Julius Randle. And it looked kind of like the play design was to get Trier the ball back, but they couldn't make it happen under the time constraints. Julius Randle heaved up a three-pointer, which he actually was shooting pretty well for the whole night. And then that was it. That was the game. He didn't make it, obviously, because the Knicks wound up losing. But, Gavin, what were kind of your thoughts on overall the flow of this game? You know, my thing was, this game was so fun because the Knicks, and I guess this is kind of how the Pelicans are going to want to play this year too, but like the Knicks were thriving off of transition. And I think that's going to kind of be their calling card this year because that seems to be, in particular, their two best players, I think, are RJ Barrett and Julius Randle. And those two seem to really, really thrive in transition.
Yeah, this was a blast for me. I mean, I've made it very clear how much I love the Pelicans on this podcast. Me and Jake Madison literally did a whole segment on a podcast called Locked On Knicks just about the Pelicans. So I'm super into them. I mean, I love their shooting, love their passing. And I think it brought the best out of the Knicks. And I mean, obviously the ending wasn't great. And I don't think it was a particularly good final couple of minutes for David Fizdale. But it was impressive to see the Knicks' resiliency throughout the second half of this game and just that they had the sheer firepower to keep up with the Pelicans. I thought that was a really good sign. I mean, granted, you could argue, as we've noted, New Orleans' best player was not on the floor for this game, who maybe would have turned this into a 15-point win for the Pelicans, but they just have a lot of really good guys. Like, you go up and down that roster. Brandon Ingram, Drew Holiday was pretty clearly the best player on the floor when he was out there. Lonzo Ball, not great, but he had some moments. J.J. Redick was bombing threes. Nikhil Alexander-Walker might be the GOAT. I'm not sure yet. Josh Hart was ridiculous. And just the fact that the Knicks could keep up with them down the stretch And Randall, who, I mean, had a stretch in the third quarter where it looked like he'd never shot a basketball before, just bombing away from three and hitting big shot after big shot. Then RJ had that sick driving layup. Trier looked super duper confident as always, especially down the stretch. Didn't shoot the ball exceptionally well, just 1 for 6 from three, but still able to score 17 points in 24 minutes. And I did appreciate, for all of Fizdale's mishaps, that he was willing to close with Trier after he's shown, like, I mean, or seemingly shown, like, a general distaste for him throughout this preseason and not really giving him significant minutes. So all in all, I mean, just from an entertainment perspective, this game was an absolute joy. And I think we saw some really good things from the Knicks overall.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, man. Like, I mean, you know, I feel like you did a pretty good job summarizing the general thing, but I'm like chomping at the bit here to get into RJ Barrett, because I just thought RJ was ridiculously good. It was kind of strange. Like, he had such an amazing first half and shot 8 of 10, and he had 17 points just in the first half alone. And then I wouldn't necessarily say he got frozen out in the second half, but it just seemed like they weren't looking to him as much. And I sort of understand that because, like, you had Randall going off and stuff. But, I mean, RJ's first half was legitimately, like, it just made you open your eyes and be like, okay, like, throw everything out the window that you ever thought about this kid not being able to be, like, a star in this league. Because, at least to me, like, I know it's still preseason and whatever, but, like, both teams played more or less like their better players all night. Like, they both treated it, it seemed like, kind of like a dress rehearsal for the regular season. And RJ just, I mean, he was dominating. He absolutely belongs in the NBA. And I absolutely think that he has, like, all-star potential at this point. Like, just, he put on, like, a total clinic. And this is literally, like, his fourth taste of NBA action in his whole life. So I was really, really encouraged by him. He was driving at will, which is just kind of his calling card now. Finding a way to finish, like, anything and everything. He showed off the athleticism two times, maybe even three. I mean, he actually had numerous, like, thunder dunks on cuts in that first half. It wasn't all in the first quarter. But he had a couple thunder dunks. One, my favorite one, probably, he made this great cut when Julius Randle was backing down, and then Randle had the vision to, you know, swing a pass around to him. RJ kind of caught it a little bit wide with his left hand and then just went up and just, like, destroyed the rim with it. It was just like a masterclass. He also shot 1 of 1 on three pointers. So the rare game where RJ is going to shoot 100% from three as well. There was, like, literally not a single thing I could complain about with his performance.
Yeah. I think, I mean, just in a big picture sense, I'm not quite as far along as you. Like, I mean, I still see, like, by and large, obviously tonight he was amazing, like, some pretty significant holes in his game. And I want to give him, like, a little bit of a larger sample size, but tonight he was perfect. I mean, I'll eat crow on tonight. Like, he was so, so good. And tonight was, I mean, I've honestly enjoyed how he's played all preseason, but tonight was, like, the first time where, like, I really sort of looked in the mirror and said, okay, like, I might be off the mark on him. Like, I'm starting to think he's better than I thought he was coming out of the draft. And to me, the biggest thing that we've seen from him is just how high of a basketball IQ he has through a couple of games. Like, those backdoor cuts were brilliant, and they were so, they really flashed in the sense you didn't see anyone on the Knicks who did that all that often last year. And it just speaks to his instincts and his willingness to take advantage, and a guy who was, I mean, schooled by Steve Nash his entire life. You can see that in his game. And I thought, you didn't even mention what I had as his play of the game, where he hit Knox on, like, a 60-foot outlet pass on, like, an absolute dime for a dunk. And again, we know that's in his arsenal, and we know he's a good passer, but that just showed off, I mean, not just a willingness as a passer and good vision, which I think we've seen from him in abundance, but just a level of skill and strength and accuracy and velocity on the basketball that only, I don't know, maybe 200 guys in the world make that pass. Like, it was really, really, really impressive. And I mean, you said it all, but I mean, just an absurdly good night for him. And another thing I enjoyed was, I feel like when he goes to the rim and he's confident and he starts feeling himself a little bit, he kind of becomes a better jump shooter. Like, everything about his shot relaxes and he starts aiming it a little bit less, and it's all instinct. And that's when it starts to look pretty fluid and like a guy who could down the road be an above average 3-point shooter.
Yeah, no doubt. Two other things that have really stood out to me, and I mean, this isn't just this game, but kind of just overall preseason impression since we've now reached the end of the road here. One is, I understand these are preseason games and they mean nothing, and that makes it that much more impressive, the body language that he shows during these games. Like, if he makes a big shot, he's like running down the floor, like slapping his knees, like trying to get everybody like pumped up on the Knicks. Like this dude clearly has like that leader mentality about him where he wants to set the tone for the whole team and like really, you know, like make these big plays that make everybody, you know, go crazy and you know, change momentum and stuff like that. That's the first thing that has really impressed me throughout preseason, because we've seen that sort of body language from him in pretty much every single game whenever he hits a shot that kind of, you know, stymies a run or does whatever. The other thing is his rebounding has been like really, really impressive to me. I feel like every single time that a ball goes up, he's somewhere in the general vicinity where he can at least attempt to get a rebound. And he's also always going for his own misses if he happens to miss. He's trying to clean up others. He's good at defensive rebounding and getting in position for that. His rebounding has been like, not that I thought he was going to be a bad rebounder, because I thought he was a pretty good rebounder at Duke as well, but I guess I'm just like pleasantly surprised how well it's translated now that he's moved to the big leagues, where he's no longer like being 6'7 and pretty well built doesn't get you nearly as far in the NBA as it did in college. You know what I mean? Like in college, he was more or less like could have passed for like a small power forward almost. And in the NBA, like he's definitely like a small forward shooting guard, but he's still getting all these rebounds and doing that. So those are probably my two last like takeaways on RJ from both this game and the preseason at large.
Yeah, I guess I hinted at it before, but I really want to see him and Knox get more minutes together for whatever reason. I think those two have really good chemistry and seem to play off each other at a pretty high level. So I'd
be interested. Frank. And yeah. I would say that those three, actually, when they've shared the floor, whatever time they have, it's been very enjoyable basketball.
You know, I am never going to fight you on Frank playing more. With that, let's wrap up segment one, take a break, come back, talk about Julius Randle a little bit next on Locked On Knicks.
Hey, are you in the New York area and looking to promote your business to a young, predominantly male demographic?
Then Locked On Knicks is the podcast for you. 80% of our listeners fall between the ages of 18 and 44, and 98% of those listeners are male. As the top Knicks podcast on the market, we offer a unique opportunity to engage with basketball fans in the city.
If interested in an ad spot or live read, email lockedonknicks@gmail.com for more information on pricing and availability. Our rates are very affordable compared to radio and offer a chance to reach an audience on an ever-growing platform.
All right, let's get into it. The point guard battle, another step forward or step backwards, depending on how you viewed this game. But that conversation just makes me nauseous. So let's talk about Julius Randle first. Another sublime performance from him, all things considered. 20 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 turnovers, missed the game winner, but hit 2 threes earlier in the closing minutes that made that game winner a possibility. I was kind of frustrated with his shot selection at points in the third quarter, and I thought he was forcing stuff a little bit, but all in all, I would say a really good performance against his former team.
Yeah, the field goal percentage left a lot to be desired. I mean, he shot 37% from the field, 7-19. That's not great. And if you take away, you know, those three-pointers that he made right at the end of the game, and then he missed the one to end the game. Like, if you took away 4 of those attempts, he only shot 1 of 4 from 3 also. I mean, obviously, you have to count them because he made them eventually, but it's just he got very, very, like, nuclear hot from 3 to end the game. And without that, his total points and his percentages wouldn't even been quite as impressive. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that he did make those shots down the stretch, and that's promising. I'm in total agreement with you about his shot selection. I did think he was forcing it a little bit, particularly in the second half. And I think, you know, we alluded to RJ kind of not really getting frozen out, but just not being utilized as much in the second half. And like, that's kind of part of that, you know, like Julius was just taking so many shots and stuff, and, you know, eating up the looks in the second half. And maybe it was a revenge thing. Maybe it was whatever. I literally read a thing this week where he said he doesn't have any ill will towards the Pelicans, but he does towards the Lakers. So I don't know if it was necessarily a revenge thing, but yeah, it was just it was a good game, though, all around. I mean, because he also had 9 rebounds, 5 assists. You know, we already mentioned that awesome pass that he made to RJ for the cutting dunk. And, you know, I think he just made a lot of good reads, you know, in the flow of the offense. And I still just I'm in love with the fact that this dude that is our starting power forward can, you know, just grab a ball, you know, grab a defensive rebound and just immediately start sprinting down the court and running the fast break, which is a pretty damn cool trait to have out of your starting power forward. So all in all, you know, shooting percentages aside, I thought it was a really good game for Randle.
Yeah, I just need to see like continued maturation for him. And I thought like throughout the preseason, he's been pretty good about not forcing stuff, but he had a little bit of a longer leash tonight with Marcus Morris being out of the game. And I thought, and maybe in his mind, that freed him up to be a little bit overly aggressive. But and I have the same issue with like Knox. I mean, and this was just one shot, but he missed like a 17-foot pull-up jumper. And it's really, really hard for these guys to do. And like, I mean, just any NBA player, because they've been taking basically any shot they want their whole lives. But you have to get to a point where you're just embracing the most efficient parts of your game. And for Randle, that's attacking as much as possible. And if that's not there, just moving the ball along. I mean, I know, and this sounds bad on a night where he shot 4 for 8 from 3, but I don't think that's sustainable in any way with the types of shots he was taking. To me, if he catches the ball in rhythm and he's relatively open, I definitely don't mind him shooting from distance. But when he takes like step backs off the dribble, it's just not going to work out over a large sample size. And it's the hardest thing in the world. I mean, it is my instinct to get a player to realize that. But Randle can be exceptionally good if he embraces the right parts of his game. And I just hope he continues to move that way. Because for the most part, I think he's been pretty good about that. But tonight, in some ways, was a step backwards. Do you want to get into the point guard battle a little bit, Alex? Because it was a little bit of a bummer of a night on that front, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call it a bummer.
I don't think TJ is that good.
I was Elfrid Payton had 6 points and 4 assists, which on the surface seems okay. And he shot 3 of 6, which was easily the best he's shot all preseason. But he also turned the ball over 5 times. And again, I didn't feel a ton of confidence with him out there running the offense. Obviously, it was announced before the game that Frank Ntilikina wasn't going to play because they just kind of were like, they wanted to get each point guard 3 games or whatever. Or, well, Smith only got 2, but you know, they wanted to have Elfrid and Frank with the equal amount of games, I guess. But like DSJ, I didn't love the scoring. He was 2 of 12, which is no good, but he did get to the line 6 times. He managed to put up 9 points. He had 6 assists, only 3 turnovers, which was good. He had 2 steals and a block, which is solid for him. And like, all in all, I just thought that he brought a lot of intensity. Like, he looked more so than the game the other night on Wednesday. He looked bouncy, like, and that was important to me. There was one sequence at one point where he just kind of went in with the trees, and like Randle had missed a layup attempt and then a putback attempt, and then Smith jumped in and he tried a putback attempt, missed it, gathered himself again, and managed to put it up in the middle of all the big men, which was pretty solid, and he got points there. The jump shot still doesn't look fantastic to me, but I don't know. I mean, they got 9 points, 9 boards, 6 assists out of him with not a ton of turnovers. Like, he still had a 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio. I think that's good. I still think, based off what we saw in the preseason, I would give the starting nod to Frank Ntilikina, based off of how he played in particular the game on Wednesday. The fact that he managed to influence that game so much down the stretch with his defense on Trae Young and everything. But like, I think I feel pretty confident saying that if you're going to have 2 like bona fide point guards playing and you know, you're just going to pick 2 out of 3 to start the season, I would say Frank starting, DSJ backing him up, both of them getting, you know, a healthy chunk of minutes.
I just want to throw out there that putback sequence was against Nicolo Melli, who I'm convinced is a Pelicans intern who won a contest and was allowed to play tonight because of that. But you know, he was, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. He was like a lot more active than last game, and clearly he feels a lot healthier and a lot more confident. But my whole thing with him is like, he just like, it just feels like it was sort of BS, like the whole thing about him improving his jumper. And maybe we see it. I mean, 2-game sample size, that's unfair to say. And maybe it comes out over the course of the regular season. But to me, I mean, he doesn't look confident at all in his jump shot. Like there were, I think, 2 different times where he had an open three and he just sort of paused. And one time he shot it late and missed it. And then the other time he tried to drive and either traveled or ended up turning it over. And I mean, I don't think his game works. I don't think he can be an average point guard in the NBA if he can't shoot. I mean, to me, that's sort of make or break for him. And we heard again and again how he got so much better in that capacity, and it doesn't seem like that's true. So that's kind of a bummer to me. And yeah, he was good. He was active. 9 rebounds, 6 assists in 31 minutes is awesome. And I hope to see more of that. But I mean, he just looks like a pretty good backup point guard to me. And I was hoping he could be a lot more than that. So again, yeah, preseason, I mean, we need larger sample size, but yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, he's still working off a lot of rust too, like coming off an injury to start the preseason and then only having played 2 games so far. I think we're going to start seeing the spring come back a little more. Also, like, if his usual touch around the rim was intact tonight, he would have probably finished with like 15 to 17 points, because he missed a couple layups that were tough-ish, but are ones that I would expect Dennis Smith to make based off of, you know, previous games and whatever, like the fancy up and under reverse type stuff. He missed a couple of those that I would normally consider to be something that's in his bag. But yeah, the jump shot is a little concerning. Like, I want to see more of it the healthier he gets, obviously. Like, that's the biggest thing. He took one attempt from three where I was like, oh, that didn't take quite as long as some of them. But then he took another, I think he took like a pull up at one point, and I looked and I was like, oh, that one was a little ugly. Like, it seemed like he held onto the ball forever while trying to get that shot up.
That's the biggest thing. It's just his shot is still different every time he shoots it. It's not consistent, which that I really don't get if he was working on it. I mean, I don't know.
It makes you just wish that Frank's shot would go in more, because Frank literally has like picture perfect form.
Yeah. He just has. Yeah. No, it's a good point. And I guess I would agree that I definitely. Again, I love Frank, so I'm inclined to dislike TSJ because of that. But I'm rooting for him. I hope he figures it out. Because obviously, I mean, the flash elements of his game are so special, but I don't see the complete package there. Anyways, let's take a quick break and we'll come back. And I want to get into Mitchell Robinson, because I thought he was really good tonight. And we'll tie up some loose ends. We'll go over everyone else too next on Locked On Knicks.
All right, welcome to the third and final segment of Locked On Knicks, finishing breaking down this preseason finale. And Gavin, Mitchell Robinson, I think, had a return to form tonight. He only played 20 minutes, or like 20 and a half, and he did, I guess, sort of get in foul trouble a little bit. You know, it's funny, I hadn't even really thought about it during the game. He did finish with 5 personal fouls in 20 and a half minutes, but in those 20 and a half minutes, he managed to accrue 10 points, 7 boards, and 4 blocks. He shot 5 of 8, so he was back on his very efficient, back in his very efficient ways again. And just in general, I thought at the best moments during this one, he looked every bit like the Mitchell Robinson that, you know, we all fell in love with last year. Of like, he was hustling for boards. He, you know, had some great putbacks. He had a really nice finish from RJ. Like, he just found good position. Like, RJ found him under the hoop and didn't quite hit him with a lob pass for an alley-oop, but Mitch like jumped up, caught the pass, and then jumped again and dunked it. And just in general, I don't know. I thought it was a very impressive game from him. He really, all 4 blocks, he actually didn't have any jump shot blocks in this one either. All 4 of them came on Jahlil Okafor, who he just kind of like blocked the crap out of every time they were matched up, it seemed like tonight. And just in general, I thought it was just an impressive Mitch game, other than the fouls. And like, now that I'm racking my brain, I can remember even one of the fouls. I was like, that didn't seem like a foul to me. Like the refs were calling it weirdly tight again, which they have over the last couple preseason games, and hopefully isn't like a huge trend this year in the NBA. But it, all in all, I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, I think he's going to benefit from the rotation tightening up and being more consistent. I think we saw this quite a bit last year where it took not only the point guards, but everyone on the floor a little bit of time to build chemistry with him and figure out just where and when to get in the basketball, because he's such a weapon. I mean, he's such a freak at his height with his leaping ability. And yet at the same time, he's still a little bit, I hesitate to say fragile because it sounds a little derogatory, but you have to figure out the right times to get him the ball because he's just not big enough yet to create space with his body consistently. So it has to be a really good pass and it has to be a really well-timed pass. And I think once he gets more time, and I think that was part of the reason he was better tonight, is because guys like RJ and DSJ have better chemistry with him, and even Wayne Ellington. And I think as that continues to he continues to play more and more with the same guys, he's going to get better and better. I thought there were a couple other guys on the Knicks who had really good nights overall. I thought Wayne Ellington was spectacular again, hitting some deep threes, 11 points. He only had one assist, but it was a really nice one in transition. And overall, I'm like pretty consistently impressed with his passing ability. Like I'm so happy they got him. Like he's everything that he was advertised to be and more as a shooter. And they just so desperately needed someone like that.
Yeah. Not to be like a walking cliche, but he's like a pro's pro. You know what I mean? Like he's just like that dude that like the Knicks, I feel like they've had those guys before, like Lance Thomas, for example. Like Lance Thomas is a pro's pro, but Lance Thomas also sucks. Like, so it's nice to have, they have Ellington and they have Gibson, who are these like wily vets who also in their early 30s happen to be in the prime of their respective careers and, you know, at the peak of their abilities right now, because both those guys, as we've noted a couple times on the pod before, have only gotten better throughout their careers, rather than, you know, most players hit their 30s and it's kind of where they begin their period of decline. These guys have been putting up their best seasons the last couple of years. So it's good to have that veteran leadership where you also know that just by having, like with Lance Thomas, it would be like Fizdale would put him out there just to make a point about like, yeah, well, the vets are going to play tonight, like not the young players. But like Lance Thomas would be an active detriment to the team while he was out there. So now, you know, if the Knicks young players aren't playing that great and they want to play the vets, it's not actually a bad thing. Like Ellington and Gibson are actually just awesome. Speaking of young players, though, I want to talk about Kevin Knox real quick, because all in all, I thought it was like a pretty good game for him. He shot 44% from the floor, 50% from three, 1 of 2. He had 9 points, 2 boards. I mean, not like jumping off the stat sheet, but he had a really nice off the dribble layup in traffic, which I know we've talked about a bunch as far as him like adjusting his gather, you know, where he decides to take off, you know, for his layups and stuff. And that was really crisp. And then he had probably my favorite sequence of the whole game. He had a 3-pointer and then ran down the other end, played good defense on, I think it was Josh Hart, who was shooting a 3-pointer and altered his shot enough that was way off. And then that was where your favorite RJ play came in, where he threw that, like, you know, most of the court bomb to Kevin Knox, and Knox was already streaking in transition and caught it and just went up for like a really powerful two-hand dunk. So that was arguably my favorite sequence of the whole game. So that was pretty cool to me.
Yeah, no, he was solid tonight. And I just want to see more of him and RJ together. I feel like for whatever reason, RJ seems to bring out the best in him. And again, my other thing with him that I noted earlier is just shot selection and continuing to take the right shots, which I thought in the second half he improved on and was starting to find those. Pretty good game for the Knicks, two black holes, Bobby Portis and Alonzo Trier. Portis 5 for 7, 1 for 3 from distance. Alex, I thought I'm going to leave it to you because I thought you had a pretty good summation of what he is pre-show when we were talking about it.
Oh, yeah. He's, to me, I feel like at this point, he's basically like big man J.R. Smith, more or less. Like, I think that you bring him in there and you have to just understand that 90% of the time the ball is just going to stick to his hands and he's going to go for a shot one way or another. And like, it's going to be up to Fizdale to hopefully recognize when he's having good and bad nights, because if he's having a bad shooting night, you're going to need to get him the hell out of there really quickly. And luckily the Knicks have the depth to do that with, you know, Gibson, Randall, Mitch, you know, as long as Mitch stays out of foul trouble, and obviously Marcus Morris, and you could even play Kevin Knox potentially at the four or whatever if you have to. But like, I just like, this was one of those games where it was really entertaining to watch him, because he shot 1 of 3 from three. He shot 5 of 7 overall. He had like a couple really nice like spin cycle moves on, was it Nico Melli? That's his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
That the intern. Your favorite player, the intern. Yeah. Like I literally barely remember the dude's name, but he had a couple nice spin moves on him. And some nice finishes, you know, in the lane and whatever. And he actually did make 1 or 2 nice passes too, which was good to see. I know he had 1 assist. I'm trying to remember who it was to. I think it might have been Trier, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But it was just all in all, I thought this game was like the epitome of what good Bobby Portis is going to be this season. And bad Bobby Portis is going to be when he's not making shots, because that's definitely like his number one contribution to the team is taking and making shots for you off the bench.
Yeah, I'm scared for any scenario where him and Trier are on the floor at the same time. Like I can't imagine that ending super well. That being said, Trier, not his most efficient night. I think he was trying to make up for lost time a little bit in terms of just jacking shots up. But he's just like ballsy in a way that not a lot of guys on this team are, and he knows exactly what he is, and I think there's a lot of value in that. Down the stretch, I'm thrilled Fizdale was willing to have him out there, because I'm just so confident in him as a shot maker. And when he was attacking in transition those couple of times in the fourth quarter, I was just thinking, if it was like Elfrid Payton or Frank or DSJ or Dot or even Knox and maybe even a couple other guys on the roster in those situations, I would have been so sure that they would have missed those layups. And Trier, I was just 100. He's just such a natural scorer. I was like 100% sure that they were going to go in. And I think there's real value in that. I still don't know what his role is on this team. And I think when you look at why RJ shot less in the second half, it's because he had more minutes with Trier out there. And I think Trier has to find a better way to balance all of that. But he's valuable. It's similar to Randall and Knox, where it's just about emphasizing the right tendencies, minimizing the wrong ones.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, for all that it kind of, you know, for all that he kind of ball hogged to some degree tonight, as is kind of his character sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of his thing. He did end up with 17 points and shot like 42% from the floor, which isn't that bad. And he only shot 1 of 6 from three, which you don't expect to see from him that often. And he got to the line 8 times, which is the most on the team. But the other thing that kind of stood out to me compared to the last game that he played, the last game that he played, he had a whole bunch of turnovers. This one, he ended up with 2 assists to 1 turnover. So I think I can live with Trier going out there and doing his ISO thing, as long as he's not, like, as long as A, that's his role, like, off the bench. Like, I'm kind of starting to think that there's certain things that are just baked into his brain that he's not going to be able to get rid of and become this, like, great on and off ball player that we want him to become. But as long as he's not turning the ball over and being reckless with it, I'm actually pretty okay with this being his role. And, you know, him potentially being a guy that could net, like, 15 to 20 minutes a game on this team and, you know, just come in and be like a buck. Getter, so I'm pretty all right with things there. Yep. Other than that, I figured we could just quickly shout out the fact Damian Dotson got his first action of the three. Came in, he just played 10 minutes, shot 1 of 2 from three. That was pretty much it. He didn't make much of an impression on me, if we're being totally honest. Like, I didn't really walk away with any Dotson impressions other than like anything different than what we already knew about him. Like, I feel like we just sort of know the player that Dotson is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what he would do playing 30 minutes. But yeah, I can't totally think of what his role is going to end up being on this team long term, or if it's going to take injuries for him to get into rotation, especially when Reggie Bullock comes back. I just wanted to wrap this podcast up because it's 2 a.m. With two insane things that Wally Cerviak said. One was he called Josh Hart Kevin Hart at one point, and I love that on the next possession, Mike Breen literally said Josh Hart's full name, I think 3 different times to fully emphasize what happened, which I really appreciated. And I love Mike Breen as always. And then the other thing was he said at one point, I think that it was something, and I apologize to Wally if I'm wrong about this, because I think I was half listening, but he said something along the lines of if Brandon Ingram reaches his full potential, he could be Kevin Durant, which I think we've seen enough to know that that's kind of ridiculous at this point. And I think Breen knew that and was just subtly like, well, yeah, I mean, I think his shooting would have to get like a lot better. Like he's sort of like low key, like roasting the comment without really making him look bad, which I think is Breen's signature a little bit. So just the interactions between those two were great. And I'm now officially out on Wally as a color analyst, despite my initial love for him. So
I've been out on Wally since like day one. Wally, He says some dumb things. I will give him props. He has at least pulled back on the making everything about him, which, because it used to always be like, Wally talks about himself like he was like freaking, I don't know, like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant combined into one sometimes. Like, you know what I mean? He's just like, he talks like he was this like perennial all-star, like mega star, you know, whatever, and that he wasn't like just kind of a shooter who had some other stuff that he could do, and everything would just be about, well, I remember when I was playing blah blah, I used to do this, I used to do that, and I'd be like, Wally, shut up, just like give the perspective, but nobody cares what you actually did, just like give the perspective of the NBA in general, that's what you're there for. But whatever, it's fine. He's mostly not going to be commenting on games. It's mostly going to be Clyde now that we're getting to the regular season. So I can rest easy now.
Yeah, five days out. With that, let's wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We will have another one hot in your feed on Monday morning. Until then, have a great weekend. And Knicks regular season coming up soon. We are ecstatic. See you next time on Locked On Knicks.